All right, happy Monday, and welcome to a peek inside SEC football. Allie Peek, Will Thomas, TJ Pittinger. We are going to break down all the biggest games of last weekend and let you know what we've got on the docket for this upcoming weekend. Excuse the voice. I sound terrible. I was really hoping to avoid getting sick, but here we are. And my Gators didn't help keeping me from getting sick this weekend. That actually contributed. But TJ, you had a good weekend. You went to Tallahassee to watch Florida State. Well, you were in Gainesville, yes or no?
No, I was not.
You were not in Gainesville. You were just watching from home.
Fortunately, he got to escape that. Yeah, he escaped
it. I did not escape that. I brought five children to watch that that butt kicking that happened. But let's get into it a little bit. So UF, USF, I think we only really talked about this for like 2 seconds last week because it was kind of a non-issue, right? This was a harder game than LIU, but nothing compared to the SEC stretch that was coming down the pipeline for Florida. We thought it was going to be a game where they had the opportunity to just kind of clean some things up in preparation for conference play. Did not turn out that way at all. USF did win 18-16. Will, what, you know, obviously the score is the most surprising thing, but what outside of the score really stood out to you as something that caught you off guard as somebody that follows the conference in Florida incredibly closely?
Yeah, I mean, I guess the biggest thing is, I mean, the discipline and execution issues that Florida had, like the past 3 years, right? Those have been issues. And Billy's been saying, like, you know, that's on me. It's on the coaches. We're getting it fixed. And he got some grace, and deservedly so, for, you know, coming in, trying to fix the culture that Mullen had left. Because at that point, when Mullen left, it wasn't very good. But then to come out and have the same execution problems, that punt snap over the punter's head for his safety. I mean, you lost the game by 2 and you had that happen. That's not the only reason, but just small things like that. And the Brandon Bett spitting on the guy's face. I mean, I've seen everybody already bring this up. The fact that it happened on Thursday Night Football, and then you come back and do it again on Saturday, just, I've never seen anything that, like, just mind-numbing in my life. Like, that was just such a bad mistake. And more on the ball side of it, like, Florida's, they couldn't get the ball to their playmakers out wide. Or it seemed like maybe they weren't like trying to necessarily. Like Vernell Brown, when he got the ball in his hands, that punt return was awesome. When Trey Wilson got the ball in space, he was electric. And then all of a sudden, we can't stop, like they can't stop throwing the ball to Hayden Hansen and Tony Livingston in the red zone. Like it just feels like the emphasis offensively was going towards players that it just should not be going around. Jaden Ball, they went away from him like after that first drive where he had 50 yards. And then he wasn't on the field during that fourth quarter drive to close the game out. Like, it just seemed like every decision made didn't make much sense. And I don't know if Florida wasn't prepared, if they were just kind of overlooking USF, which would be very bad after what they did to Boise. But just a lot of what Florida did this past weekend didn't make much sense to me.
So, you know, you mentioned the spitting with Betts, and you know, we all watched Jalen Carter get in trouble, get ejected on Thursday night. I feel like when I turned on ESPN for the next 2 days, that was the cover story. I mean, there were news organizations that don't cover sports covered the fact that that happened. It was all over social media. But, you know, the thing that I find interesting, too, and I'm drawing a blank on who the player was, but do you remember 2 years ago, TJ, when Florida State and Florida played in the Swamp? We went together. Florida had a player spit on a Florida State player in that game too. And I just have such a hard time reconciling in my mind that I think Coach Napier does an incredible job with discipline off the field. We don't hear about Florida players getting arrested or skipping class or, you know, being mean to their grandmother. Everybody does all the things that they are supposed to do behaviorally off the field. I don't know that I can think of a more disrespectful thing to do to another human being than spit at them. It has never once ever crossed my mind in my 40 years on this planet to spit at another person. And the fact that it has happened on 2 Napier coach teams in 3 years is kind of wild to me. And I'm not saying that a head coach can control the emotional outbursts of every single guy that puts on a jersey for them. And I know that that's not realistic at all. But the fact that it's happened twice is still kind of concerning, right, TJ?
Yeah, and that was in a big moment too. It was Jamari Lyons when we were there. I would, and now it's the same exact impact, right? But I would be more okay if you swung on a guy, if he just popped him, right? Yes. Like it's now it's the same thing. It's 15 yards. It's an ejection. Yes. You're out of the game. You probably missed the night, whatever.
Yes.
But like, I don't understand the whole spitting thing. And again, yeah, like I want to blame Napier because it's at the end of the day, it is his team. He'll take some blame for this for sure. But I don't understand, man, for a team that if we want to say some good things about Napier, which maybe UF fans don't want to hear that, man, culture is such a big thing. The way that they've stuck together, the way that they very rarely have guys jump in the portal, the way that the recruits and the players play hard for him, even when a season is deemed over and he's already been fired by the fan base and boosters and everything else. Like he does such a good job with that. And then in these big moments, there is just absolutely no mental composure. And I think that's the biggest problem with Florida. From a coaching staff, from a play calling standpoint, from the actual players on the field, there's no mental, and sometimes it shows up. Like it showed up against LSU and Ole Miss and Florida. There were some big games last year. But I think that when you really think about them, like they have no ability to take a punch in the mouth and respond to that in a good way, a theoretical punch in the mouth, right? The LSU game, they got out early. The Ole Miss game, they got, but when they get down, man, they just, from a coaching staff, from a player, from an execution standpoint, they just completely go into a shell and then they start just being absolutely idiotic, snapping a ball over a guy's head. I mean, they're lucky that didn't turn into a touchdown. You know, the punter, you know, was able to get onto it. And then spitting on people, committing. I mean, they gave him 30 yards on that last drive. And then right past that, the guy is tackled in the backfield for a loss of 5 on a play that would have kept the clock running for USF. And he ends up with 35 yards down the sideline. It's just everything that you could imagine from a mental toughness standpoint doesn't exist with this team. Now, we'll talk about LSU later, and we'll talk about their chance to rebound. And so maybe they get it back, and everything I'm saying right now is wrong. But there is no mental toughness on this team. And then you were even texting me, you know, after the game. I hate the way the players are responding to the spitting and stuff. And, you know, again, PR, you know, how much does that matter in the course of a game? I don't know. But I do think that, man, that's my biggest takeaway. Yeah, they should win on the line of scrimmage. Yeah, they should go back to ball more. Yeah, DJ should, you know, looks a little rusty from having practice. All those things are true. But still, man, it's USF. And I'm not trying to discount them. They're a ranked team, and I hope they win this weekend. But, man, this is still USF.
And I hope USF wins this weekend as well. But I think, honestly, the bigger issue is this. We have a coach. Is Golich in his second or third year as coach? Maybe third season at USF. You have a team with talent that Florida didn't want, right? There's not a single person on that roster that Florida wanted, but USF stole. So there is a massive talent advantage for Florida. There is a massive resource advantage to Florida. There is a massive, and I'm talking everything from NIL to facilities to training table.
Staff size.
Staff size, yeah. All of it. Florida has the advantage there. And they have a coach whose system has been in place a year longer. So you look at all of those things and we can say, you know, USF's a good team. Let's not discount this win. It's USF has beat Boise. They beat Florida. They put together a good team, but that's kind of the point, right? Napier has every single advantage and the underdog put together the better team. I really think that's the whole point of all of this. They didn't get lucky. They were good. They watched Florida's film. They figured out where the holes were. They exploited it. They made adjustments on the fly. They were the better team, fighting with one hand behind their back, essentially. And, you know, I want to comment on the Rocco Underwood snap for a second. I feel terrible that this is even something that is getting discussed because this is a kid who had two bad snaps his entire career. Unfortunately, they both come at really untimely, you know, situations, and they've really hurt the team. But you're talking about the best long snapper in college football. And in a normal scenario where everybody is doing their job 9 times out of 10, your all-American long snapper having one bad snap doesn't affect the outcome of a game. But here, you know, here we are in this situation. And, you know, the penalties, we lauded Florida for having no penalties last week. We talked about how impressive it was, and especially considering the number of bodies that they just rotated in. Well, if we lauded it last week, we got to talk about it this week. 11, over 100 yards. It's inexcusable. And, you know, I know Florida fans are not happy with some of the refs. I've gone back and watched some of the stuff. And are there some ticky-tack calls? Sure. Are you going to rely on the call being made correctly against USF? If so, that's a problem. And, you know, TJ, you mentioned the looking ahead. Billy Napier, somebody mentioned in the comments, has never once started 2-0 at the University of Florida. In his four seasons there, he's never started 2-0. He has the same winning percentage today as he had two games into his first season at Florida. So I can't believe the looking ahead thing, because that makes my head explode. You haven't been good one game at a time, but you're going to look down the road. Like, we don't play games where we blow out the opponent generally. Florida plays close games. So looking ahead is asinine, right? I don't know. This is a disappointing from top to bottom. Well, did you listen to the press conference? Was there anything that was said by either Lagway or Napier that stood out to you?
I listened to some of it. Really what kind of resonated with me is, like, in all these other times where there have been, you know, bad losses or like they've gotten blown out, Napier's gone up there and he said, you know, execution, we weren't prepared, all that. It's on the coaches. It's on me. We have to be better. That was refreshing at first to hear that accountability come from the coaching staff. In year four, it's almost insulting to the fans because, like, sure, you can say you're going to go back and get better at this. It's been 4 years and nothing's really gotten better. So what are you actually doing during the practice weeks? I mean, yeah, it's just at a certain point where this just can't keep happening at the University of Florida, or a change has to be made. And obviously, we saw last year they turned it around. That this is supposed to be the most talented team that Napier's had. And it seems like all of that talk got to Florida. Like, they heard all summer, everyone was telling them how pretty they were, how bought in everybody was, how they were a playoff team. And they kind of went out this weekend. JD Bakel put this really well. It seemed like they were obligated to play that game, not like they wanted to go out there and win that game. Yeah. So they kind of just went out there. They were sleepwalking. They're like, we're better than this team. We got LSU next week. Let's just get this done. And then they paid for it. And as a 17.5 point favorite at home, only scoring 16 points is pretty bad. Like, even if you're not going out there with the attitude like, this is a very important game, we have to go out there and step on their necks, it's just, you really just can't do that ever, especially in the spot that Florida was in.
And you just saw them last week, right? Like, you just saw them up. And I know Boise State is not Florida, right? But, like, you just saw them last week absolutely demolish a college football playoff team. Yes, and I get it. It's Boise State. Somebody's always going to get in from the playoff team. But Boise State they're similar to USF, man, and they beat the crap out of them. So if this would have happened in week one, and everybody gets – now, it wouldn't make Gator fans feel any better, right? But if this would have happened in week one, and USF just absolutely snuck up on you, I think that'd be one thing. Oh, shoot, like, you got them in week one. Weird things happen. Florida State beat Alabama in week one. There's weird things that happen in this sport. But, man, after watching them lay the wood to Boise State, like, if that wasn't a wake-up call, then, like, what was? I mean, Allie, you had Andy Staples from On Three on your show preseason. Or maybe it was Andy, or maybe it was Chris. Maybe it was Doring. I'll take that back. You had Chris on, and he said, look, I know a lot of fans are getting, you know, that USF game is not – I mean, he was saying that preseason. That USF game, yeah, they should win, but that ain't the cupcake that people think it is. And so you had people that are associated
with – We got that wake-up call to show us, even if you didn't believe it when Doring said it, or Staples said it, or whatever. You had to believe it when you watched it with your own eyes.
Yeah, so it's just – I mean, it's inexcusable now. All that said, it's week two. And we will get to the LSU game in a minute. So they've got a chance. But, man, I mean, you guys can answer this. They ain't got to be a lot of confidence that they are going to do it. Now, they did it last year. But, man, it's daunting to lose this one. And if you had just snuck it out, if you just found a way late, if you didn't spit on a guy, if you make a tackle in the backfield, you probably just look back at it and say, hey, we found a way, right? Weird circumstances. USF's a good team. We found a way. Man, to not be able to close – they couldn't close in the red zone. They couldn't close on special teams, and they couldn't close that last drive.
About 90% of Florida's losses over the last 4 years. We could make those exact statements and apply them to any of them. And TJ, you and I had this conversation off air yesterday. Tennessee last year is a really good example. Poor clock management, terrible success in the red zone, head scratching plays at the end. And, you know, when it's a top 10 Tennessee, maybe you get a pass, right? You're like, okay, well, this is a top 10 team in the country and we played them close and we just couldn't get them done. Even though if you watch the game, you saw that, like, you shot yourself in the foot. It wasn't actually Tennessee. But when this is USF, it is more concerning, and it's year four. This is the first home loss to a school from the state of Florida, not named Florida State or Miami, since 1938. Stetson.
World War II.
Came to Gainesville to win. I say yes, pre-World War II. I mean, all these records falling all over the place here. It's embarrassing. And they, but it is week two. You're right. And in theory, this is a Florida team that could still go 9-3. That would require wins against teams we didn't think they were going to win because they got a loss against a team we didn't think they were going to lose to. I'm not saying I think this is likely, but it is absolutely possible. But it's gut check time in week two for the Florida Gators. And that is not something any of us thought we were going to be sitting here and saying. And it makes the next 4-week stretch even more intimidating and even more important than it was a week ago.
Yeah, and Florida's going to win some games. Like, I know it's all doom and gloom right now, but man, the gimmies don't even look like gimmies anymore, right? I mean, Mississippi State looked good. Kentucky looked good. I mean, I had those penciled as easy Florida wins before the year.
Struggled with Kentucky. Almost pulled that off.
Tennessee looks better, and we'll talk about that Tennessee-Georgia game in a little bit. Florida State looks – all these games that I was like, Florida will win those. Like, that, you know, Florida will start out with bowl eligibility, and then their season will be dictated on the other six games. They don't. It doesn't look like that now, you know. And they're going to win some of them, right? They're not going 1-11, but everything's going to be a battle at this point, unless they really do kick it up into gear and into overdrive. So,
which it may very well happen, but it still requires then an inward look at why does Florida start so slowly every single season? You know, you have 9 months to prepare for this, and we talk about looking ahead. They probably would have been okay overlooking LIU and looking ahead to USF. You know, if you were going to look ahead to something, you could have done that. But you had 9 months, and this is the product you're currently putting on the field with guys that are not playing up to their talent potential. You know, we know what this team is made of. But let's, we spent a lot of time on Florida USF. Let's pivot. Let's talk a little bit about Oklahoma Michigan. This was an exciting matchup, a Big Ten SEC matchup. Oklahoma was, you know, kind of down last year for Oklahoma standards and I don't think had the welcome into the SEC that they were maybe hoping that they were going to have, but took care of business against Michigan last week, 24-13. Will, what stood out to you on this game?
Ja Mateer. I mean, I love this kid so much.
You've been on the bandwagon for a while. We'll join you now.
Oklahoma and Carolina, man, I love those two schools. Carolina's shaky, but we'll get to that in a little bit. But I mean, I had Oklahoma going 10-2 in the preseason. I thought they looked awesome this past week because Michigan defense, that's a great defense. And Mateer threw for 270 and a touchdown. He did have a pick on that one overthrow. But I mean, he also ran for 74 yards and two scores. Like, he's such a game breaker for any opposing defense. Deion Burks looked awesome for Oklahoma out wide also. And leading up to that game, part of the reason why I liked Oklahoma so much was because you had Bryce Underwood, who is a true freshman, going on the road to play against a Brent Venables defense. And Underwood, I do believe he has all the talent in the world, but Venables held him to 9 of 24 passing for 142 yards. Now, Justice Haynes for Michigan still did run for 125 and a touchdown, but I mean, Oklahoma's defense is still, you know, a Brent Venables defense. So seeing their offense now also come around where they can have them both in tandem makes them incredibly dangerous. And that was I'm not sure Michigan scores 13 or less in any other game this year. Maybe Ohio State, but that game is always, you know, 7-10. But I mean, Oklahoma looked really, really good. And I think that winning this game against Michigan was one thing. Beating them by two scores is seriously confidence inspiring because that team was like dealing with, you know, the outside noise of this is a really talented roster. Could they make a run? They have to turn this around for Venables. Now it's kind of real. I think winning this game by two scores makes it really, really real. So there is a part of me now that's like worried about how are they going to respond with everybody telling them how awesome they are. You know, are they going to take the foot off the gas? But I don't think that would be a problem because of how high the stakes are for them this year. And I thought Oklahoma looked really, really good on both sides of the ball.
TJ, you know, Oklahoma was seen as kind of a middle of the road SEC, maybe middle of the road to bottom of the pack SEC team last year. And Michigan picked off Ohio State. Michigan's had, and Michigan's been in the playoffs in recent years. Michigan has had, I mean, I guess when you cheat, it's easier to win, but they've had some success. What does this mean in the battle of which conference is superior?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a bad matchup for Michigan. So I don't know, you know, I mean, the SEC has done well to start this year, right? And the Big Ten hasn't really played anybody outside of Ohio State, you know, getting their win. So, yeah, I think we'll find out you know, as time, you know, moves along. But, you know, I think Michigan will probably be fine. Like, I actually was fairly impressed with them. The one thing I do think that Oklahoma did really well, and since Will stole the material answer, which was the only answer since you went to him first, their defensive line was still really good too. I mean, you mentioned Haynes having 125. He had a 75-yard rush, right? So you don't want to give up a massive explosive. But outside of that, he had 50 yards on, what, 18 carries. What's that, 2 2/3 or 2 2/3 yards of rush? Like, they did a good job of limiting him. And Michigan wants to run the ball, especially with a true freshman back there. I think it says more about Oklahoma than anything. And I mean, Will said, you know, they can't let their foot off the brake. I mean, and they won't. I don't think, you know, their schedule, as much as we've talked about Florida's schedule being tough, Auburn is ranked right now. Then they play Texas, who is ranked. Then they play South Carolina, who's ranked. Then they play Ole Miss, who's ranked. Then they play Tennessee, who's ranked. Then they play Alabama, Missouri, and LSU, who are all ranked. And so their schedule is just absolutely ridiculous. And Florida's schedule has gotten tougher too, with Florida State being Mississippi State, Kentucky stuff. But like those two schedules, my gosh. I do think that this, I just think it says so much about Oklahoma, right? And they were expected to win. They were a favorite. I think we all picked them in this one to win it at home. But to be as dominant as they were against a very talented Michigan defense, like, this was a defense that I had a lot of, I didn't have much confidence in Michigan's offense. I thought they were going to have to win this game like 17-13 or something like that if they were going to find a way to win. But for them to go up against a very good Michigan defense and Mateer look as good as he did, I'd like him to get down more. I'd like him to not take many hits throughout the year. But man, he's got that confidence and swagger that makes him look like the best quarterback out of the portal. And, you know, against the Michigan defense, he really showed that.
All right. Well, we won't really get into it, but would definitely upset Mississippi State, beat Arizona State. That, you know, that's pretty cool for the conference. That's a little nerve wracking for us Gator fans, because that was something we had circled as a W on our schedule. Anything else stand out for you guys from the weekend that you think is worth mentioning before we start previewing this upcoming week's games?
I'll give some credit to Missouri just super quick. I mean, I was pretty low on Bo Prabula and their offense coming into this year. Prabula looks really, really good as their quarterback. He threw for over 330 and 3 touchdowns. Their running game looks awesome. Missouri's offense is way better than I thought it was going to be, and their defense looks just as good as I was hoping it would be. So Missouri could also be very dangerous in this conference.
Yeah, I thought Vandy was really impressive. To go into Blacksburg and win, we're going to talk about Vandy, South Carolina a little bit. I know you can't do the transitive property so much, but like, South Carolina needed like special teams magic to beat Virginia Tech at a neutral site. And then Vandy went up to Blacksburg and beat the absolute tar out of them. That sets up a pretty fun matchup this weekend for Vandy and South Carolina. So we don't typically give a lot of Vandy love just because they're Vanderbilt, but man, shout out to them. I thought they were really good. And then yeah, Perula and those guys, I thought Kansas was going to win that game at points in the second half, and they kind of turned it on late for Missouri to get the win. But I thought that was impressive. One other quick one too. Alabama certainly got some frustrations out. I know it's ULM, but that's still an FBS program, and you go over 70. I think they had, what, 2 incompletions the whole day between like 3 guys passing. They took out all their week one frustrations on an inferior opponent. And that might set up a little bit more fun of a game when they travel to Athens in a couple of weeks. So those are my kind of high level takeaways before we start to preview some stuff from this upcoming weekend.
All right. Well, week 3 of the season has some pretty intriguing matchups for us to get into. Let's talk first about Tennessee, Georgia. This game is in Neyland Stadium. It's a 3:30 kick. Georgia is favored by 4.5 right now. This line, you know, it's only Monday morning right now, so this line will potentially move. I think it opened at a 6.5 point favorite, though. So I feel like, so it's obviously getting smaller. Can Tennessee upset Georgia? TJ, we'll let you go first. They'll steal all the good material the last couple of games we talked about.
You just like him more because he's wearing blue, not garnet.
he's on my side. I do like him more.
I've been impressed with Aguilar so far. And I was not a Nico believer. Like, I was not Nico's just a mate, you know, like this generational quarterback. I thought he had all the talent in the world. But I also think that quarterbacks just look really good in Josh Heupel's system because he's elite on that side. And so Nico has impressed me. And Georgia, Will, I'll defer to you here. I did not catch any Georgia highlights. As Ali mentioned earlier, I was in Tallahassee, and then I was driving home watching you guys' game. And so I certainly was not turning in for Austin Peay versus UGA. That's just, sorry, I can't do it. But I mean, they didn't win as convincingly there as you maybe would have wanted if you're a Georgia fan. Now, did they try and save some stuff? Did they have two cupcakes to start the year and not really care? Probably. But I do think that this sets up a situation where going into the year, I didn't have a lot of faith in Tennessee to pull this off, even being at home. Now you look at this game and you're like, man, is Georgia the Georgia that we've been seeing for the last few years, right? Could Tennessee get this done? And I do think they have a chance. I think their defense is playing well. Again, you have to consider opponents, but man, they thrashed Syracuse, who won 10 games last year. And I'm a little low on Syracuse. They nearly got beat by UConn this week. But playing all this transitive property has me thinking that Tennessee does have a chance. But Will knows way more than I do, so I'll defer to him.
Well, you know, this is Gunnar Stockton's first road game as a starter, but Tennessee has only ever beaten Kirby Smart once since he became the head coach at Georgia in 2016. Is this the year that Tennessee gets UGA's number?
I think it could be. And so now that we have 2 weeks of data points, I started diving into more the deeper analytics, try and get a good read on like where I think there are advantageous matchups in this game. And like looking at Tennessee's offense, it's obvious just from looking at them, but they have a great success rate on explosive passing plays. And Georgia's defense against weaker competition doesn't have awesome numbers against downfield passing. Like they're kind of prone to explosives through the air. So that's a big advantage for Tennessee, I think. But then where I think Georgia also has the advantage is that offensive points per opportunity, which effectively just means when you get the ball inside your opponent's 40, Georgia is scoring 5.5 points on average, and Tennessee's defense in that same spot gives up 5. Now, Georgia's defense is better in that spot, so it seems like to me this profiles as Georgia gets touchdowns and Tennessee gets field goals. But my question is, can Tennessee take the top off their defense and, you know, score from their own 30, which I do think is possible. And because Georgia's offense has not been very explosive. So if Georgia's going to score, it's going to be, you know, running the ball, ground and pound, trying to wear down Tennessee. And Tennessee is on the exact opposite side of that. Like their running game is good, but we're going to hit 30-yard passes over your head and hope that that sustains us to be able to score enough points. This is actually a really, really fun matchup to me. And like TJ brought up Georgia against Austin Peay. 28-3 wasn't very impressive, but part of me thinks that Georgia was kind of looking ahead, and there was like an hour or so long weather delay. And whenever that happens, games just get weird, right? Guys get, you know, they're out of the flow of the game. Yeah. So I think that contributed to it a little bit. But this game should be really, really good. And he mentioned Aguilar. I was also low on Aguilar. Georgia's defense, if I was at all right about Aguilar, this is the game that Aguilar looks like, you know, 53% completion rate, maybe one or two picks. If he looks really good, I've got to take back everything I said about this offense all summer. But I do think Georgia is good enough where they can kind of mess with him a little bit, get more pressure, obviously a more talented secondary. But this is going to be a really, really fun matchup, I think.
I'm excited too. And I think, you know, Neyland Stadium is one of my favorite venues in the SEC. It's loud. It's wild. Those fans will be ready. It's been, it's been a while since they've been able to claim victory over Georgia in that stadium. Those fans are ready for it. I do want to, off topic, shout out Dan Mullen for taking care of business against Nico this past, 3-0. If Dan Mullen makes the playoffs this year, do you know how many Gator fans' heads will explode all over the country?
I saw earlier in the year, like Andy or Ari or one of those guys put UNLV in as their group of five representative. And as soon as I saw that, I mean, I think it was like in July, I was like, oh man, my life needs this. My life needs this for the trolls. But man, they struggled in week one, but they're certainly looking better. Week zero, I guess, but they're looking better now.
Looking better and better. All right. Well, let's give some predictions on this one. TJ, if Tennessee wins, what went right? But then also give me your actual realistic score prediction.
Yeah, they were able to finish. I think one thing Tennessee's done really well, and this is a characteristic of a hypo offense and team, is they've started well. Didn't they have like a 2-score lead against Georgia last year or maybe the year before? Like they've started well against Georgia typically, and they start well against a lot of teams. And then through the course of the game, the other team will, slowly chip away and come back and win. And then I think Georgia won by like 14 or something when they played last. I think that's kind of the like, it can't just be a flashy hot start where Kirby adjusts. He's so good at adjusting in halftime. And then they kind of slowly start to shut them down in the second half. So maybe, I don't know, if you're hypo, maybe you save some of that stuff. Maybe you pull, like when Florida State upset Alabama, they didn't pull the wheel route out on drive one. They pulled it out on drive eight in the second half to go up by 3 scores. So I don't know, maybe you call it a little bit differently and you save some of that stuff for later. And to me, it's about finishing. If they can finish, they'll have a chance. Because I think they'll be in it. I don't think this is a Georgia 17-point win or anything like that. I think they'll be in it. I just don't know if the talent is enough. And I do think that Joey Aguilar going up against a really good defense, a really good secondary, will make it pretty tough on him. But, man, we've seen home environments impact games already at this point in the year. And that place does get rocking. I was kind of pissed off when I saw it was a 3:30 kick because my kids have their first soccer game. And then I saw a flight into Knoxville that would leave Tampa at like 2 and get me there at 3. And I was like, dude, I can go to this game. And then I saw it was a 3:30 game. And I was like, I can't do it. So I had really planned to go. Like, they play soccer down by the airport. I was going to go. And whoever scheduled this at 3:30, you know, you're not on my Christmas list this year. Georgia wins 24-17.
Okay. We have Florida has an away game. Obviously, we'll talk about Florida LSU in a moment. So I will actually get to couch rot all Saturday.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing too. So, no complaints.
Sports are happening on Sunday this week. And so it like the sports gods aligned for me and I get to couch rot and I cannot wait. This is one of the ones I'm most excited about. But Will, okay, same question to you. If Tennessee wins, what went right and what's your score prediction?
If Tennessee wins, I think they did a good job of stopping Georgia at the line of scrimmage because Georgia they've been getting great line yards per rush and also in the second level. So they've been running the ball effectively both to get through the defensive line and then getting by linebackers. So if Tennessee's defense, which I do think is pretty talented, is able to kind of slow that down. I talked already about how Georgia's offense hasn't been very explosive. Now are they probably sitting on some explosive plays? Sure. But that can be hard to pull out for the first time in Neyland at a college game day game. So if Tennessee does win, they stop Georgia from running the ball effectively. And Aguilar was sharp and he was able to connect on several deep passes. I'm not sure that's how it's going to go. I've got 28-20 Georgia because I do think Georgia's going to be able to finish off those drives. And like I said, Tennessee inside the 40, their offense is able to score pretty well when they get those scoring opportunities. But Georgia's defense has been locking down, granted against Austin Peay and Marshall, but Georgia's defense is Georgia's defense, and I still buy that entirely. So I got 28-20 Georgia because I think Tennessee kicks field goals, Georgia punches it in.
All right. I actually think Georgia wins this one as well. I really hate agreeing with you guys. If we could start games where we could, you know, they were toss-ups or we could argue, I would appreciate that. Let's move on to our next game of the week. Let's talk a little bit about Texas A&M and Notre Dame. This is a 7:30 kick. It is in South Bend. I believe right now Texas A&M is a 6.5-point favorite. Again, reminder, this is Monday when we're recording this, so this line can move for sure.
Wait, is that right? I think Notre Dame's a slight favorite. Am I wrong about that?
Okay, Notre Dame by 6.5, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, I don't know where I just looked at a Aggies open a 6.5-point. Oh, I read it wrong. 6.5-point dogs against Notre Dame.
Sorry, guys. Favorite on the road's wild.
That's what happens when we are live and I am sick and can't read. Okay, cool. Well, Notre Dame is a favorite against Texas A&M. This is an interesting test for Texas A&M. Obviously, Notre Dame was in the national championship game last year. They have all the hype. But Texas A&M is a stout team with a really good roster. And, you know, I haven't laid roster to roster next to each other, but I would assume that talent profile is pretty similar. Well,
there's definitely not a giant gap between either roster at all. Both teams are incredibly talented. And just for on the A&M side, this is a start. Marcel Reed did get banged up at the end of their game last week, but Mike Eccles is like saying he's going to be okay. But if he walks in less than 100%, I mean, Notre Dame will hurt you when they tackle you. So that could potentially be a problem. But I do think Reed will be okay. And on A&M's defensive side, their front seven against two weaker opponents, their front seven has a havoc rate of 21.1%, which is just what percentage of snaps do you force a tackle for loss, pass breakup, turnover, things like that. So that's been very, very good. And CJ Carr, he looked awesome at Miami. But if you get a young quarterback kind of on his toes, you start putting him behind the sticks, maybe get some turnovers, that can be a pretty big shift. But to counter that for Notre Dame, you know, do we see Jeremiah Love anymore? Like, he didn't get the ball really any against Miami. Yeah. Granted, Jadarian Price did really well, but you want to see more Love for Notre Dame. And also for the Irish, they kind of need a receiver to step up in their passing game because Eli Raridan, their tight end, was their leading receiver by like 50 yards. Like he caught 5 passes for 97 yards. Granted, a lot of that was on that one deep shot near the end of the game, but no receiver for Notre Dame was above 48 yards receiving. And if they want to really be able to control the game against A&M, they have to have a diverse enough attack because Elko will be able to scheme up against a one-dimensional offense very, very well. So I'm interested to see how Notre Dame's offense runs. You know, do they give the ball more to Jeremiah Love? Do they lean on Love and Price as a tandem? Are their receivers able to create more separation? And just how does A&M's defense respond to that?
So TJ, this is, you know, we have revenge versus Notre Dame up there. This is a return visit. Notre Dame came into Kyle Field last year and handed A&M their first loss of the season. Texas A&M now traveling, obviously, to Notre Dame. This is not a situation where a road environment should affect this team at all, given what they play in week in and week out in the SEC, correct? Or is there something special waiting for them there that you know the Catholics are bringing down on Texas?
I
was going to say,
I mean, how much do you believe in Touchdown Jesus? It would
I mean,
be a
I
lot.
Am Catholic.
I think... yeah, I mean, to me, yeah, I think sometimes, you know, home road gets a little overblown, right? I mean, we've seen teams, you know, win big games at home, lose big games at home.
That can never be overblown, I promise you.
Yeah, there are some exceptions to that for sure. But I don't think Notre Dame is like, they'll get pissed off for me saying this. Like, it's not like a top five place, like where opponents just never win or anything like that. It really does come down to the matchup. And you were spot on. The 247 Sports Composite has these teams one spot apart, right? Like,
okay.
11 and 12 or something. Okay. I'm sorry, 8 and 9. Let me not disrespect them that much. But super close. To me, this is about the players, though. Like, I worry, you know, you mentioned Price and Love, Will. I worry a little bit about A&M's depth on the defensive line, if they can really stop the run. Because if Notre Dame is running the ball well, that makes things a lot easier on CJ Carr. Not, and as much as we crap on Miami for their home environment, there were a lot of people at that game and a lot of Notre Dame fans. I get it.
I mean, things were BOGO on
playing at home is always going to be easier for a quarterback than making his first big start on the road against a really talented UM team. And so, yeah, I think that, I mean, I like Notre Dame in this game. We'll pick it in a minute, but I do think that the biggest key to me is, can Texas A&M's defense do enough on the front to slow that running game? I think that Notre Dame will very much emphasize Jeremiah Love and Jadeveon Price. I think that because they weren't able to run the ball as effectively as maybe they wanted, especially with Love in that first game, that will be the emphasis here. And, you know, you mentioned the health of Marcel Reed and just what does A&M have on the offensive side. I love their weapons. I love Casey Concepcion. I love their running backs that are both coming back from injury. I think they've got a lot of talent, but I also think Notre Dame's defense is very, very good. And I think that that is going to be a challenge for A&M's offense. But again, the thing that I'm looking for the most, more than anything else, is what is A&M's defensive line, which lost a ton last year, how well do they go up against that Notre Dame front and that Notre Dame running attack? Because that could spell for kind of a long day for the Aggies if they're not able to slow it down.
If you are Notre Dame, you know, your two hardest games of the entire 2025 season happen by week three, right? They lost a close one to Miami, and now they've got Texas A&M. And we usually say, I don't like, I'll give you an example. I always say I would rather play Tennessee early in the season than late in the season, because I think that they're one of those teams that just builds on themselves throughout the year and they take a little bit of time to get going. So I'd rather get them early. If you're Notre Dame, do you love the way this sets up, because you're happy you got Miami and Texas A&M when you did, because you think they're going to be juggernauts, and you, if you play in a close game and or beat, you know, Texas A&M, this helps you later down the road for the playoffs? If you had played them in week eight, they might have blown the doors off you, or what? In the way that the schedule design plays out, is this benefit Notre Dame, or is this going to be a hindrance and something that now moving forward we're going to see less and less of because of the new design for the playoffs?
I would probably say the way this works out for them right now, it's kind of a hindrance, especially because if A&M goes in there and wins this game, what is Notre Dame's playoff resume?
Yeah.
Right? Because these are their only two games in week one and two, or one of games one and two for Notre Dame. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I mean, if they lose this game, who is their next best win? I don't have the schedule, but like, their next best win is not going to be. Yeah. Like, I do think USC is decent, but I mean, you really have to have two good wins as an independent. Yeah. Mm-hmm. If Notre Dame drops this one, their playoff chances, I think, plummet. Yeah. So having these both this early, with a young quarterback like Notre Dame has, I do think it's a bit of a hindrance just because of how the rest of their schedule is a bunch of not random schools, but not like elite schools where you can really build a resume off of beating them.
Yeah, nobody else is really that good. Purdue, terrible. Arkansas, maybe that's a little more tricky this year. Boise State, we already saw what USF did to them. NC State, trash. USC, okay. Boston College, trash. Navy, trash. Pitt trash, Syracuse trash, Stanford trash. Like they don't play anybody else the rest of the way. I do think specifically on the schedule though, getting that bye week is a big help. The way they played in the fourth quarter against Miami, even though they lost, I like Marcus Freeman a lot and I loved his post game stuff that he.
I love him a lot too.
But I do think that is a help. Getting this bye week here, having Reed get a little bit banged up, like that's a help. But yeah, it's a lot of pressure too, because Will's right. You lose this one and you're starting to wonder, man, are they going to sneak in? Now I will say, and we know that this college ball playoff committee, you know, certainly I've had my complaints with it. Brands matter. And so a 10-2 Notre Dame should feel relatively safe because of their brand power, but their resume power is going to be complete trash. You know, unless Miami wins the ACC and A&M goes to, you know, Atlanta, then, you know, you're supposed to not be penalized for bad losses. But yeah, they really won't have a lot of good wins unless USC could be the only one. But again, I do think their brand will help them when that, you know, is a 9-3 Ole Miss getting in or a 10-2 Notre Dame. I think the TV networks would rather see Notre Dame there, whether they deserve it or not.
All right, let's get some predictions out there. Will, who you got?
This game is going to be really, really close. I do think that A&M is going to be able to score enough, right? They're not going to be held to 13 or 14. They'll be able to score a number of points with their pair of running backs, Mario Craver and Casey Concepcion. I don't like that A&M gave up 22 and 24 to their first two opponents, who were not stronger teams at home. Because as I was reading this game, it feels like they have to hold Notre Dame to 24 or 27 if they want to win this game. And with the Irish scoring 24 on the road against Miami, really without Jeremiah Love, with a tight end dominating their receiving game, it feels like a tall task for an A&M defense that hasn't shown that they can really suffocate another team. So I think it's going to be close. I just don't think that A&M is going to be able to get, you know, that one final stop at the end of the game. I've got Notre Dame 28-24.
All right, TJ?
Yeah, it's tough for me too for A&M's defense. I know that you don't pull out every trick in the book against, you know, inferior competition, but they give up 24 points to UTSA and 22 points to Utah State. I would like to think that Notre Dame can get above that, right, and score a little bit more at home. So I think Notre Dame probably gets close to 28, and I'll say A&M keeps up with them but just isn't able to do enough. I'll say 21-28 or 28-21 Notre Dame.
Okay, I'm really excited. I'm going to pick against you guys. yay, woo, we're here. Okay, Texas A&M. I'm going to say Texas A&M wins 30-27. Mainly because I wanted to pick against you guys, but also because I am not fully sold on this Notre Dame team. I think Texas A&M is gritty. I think that it's really easy to get lost in a conference that's just incredibly deep. But you remove some of these teams that are maybe middle of the pack SEC and they dominate other places. And I think that's kind of what we are going to see on Saturday. So I am going 30-27 Aggies.
If they win this, if Allie's right, they've got a really good chance to go into that LSU game in Baton Rouge undefeated. They play Auburn next. They play Mississippi State next. They play Arkansas after that. Or I'm sorry, they play Florida and then Arkansas. And so, you know, with Florida struggles, with Auburn, Mississippi State, still kind of question marks. I think they'd have a really good chance to be 7-0 going to that LSU game, which would, you know, at that point probably be a top five matchup between both teams. So yeah, this would be a big one for A&M. If you lose this one, then you look at the back half of their schedule with games at LSU, games at Texas, games at Missouri, having to play South Carolina, who beat the dog out of them last year, and you're starting to think, man, here goes 8-4 again. But man, if they could win this one, it starts to put them a little more on the national scene, and people start saying, whoa, the Aggies might have something.
All right, let's move a little southwest, and we are going to talk about Florida LSU. This is one of my favorite games of the year every single year. Maybe not this season with the position that Florida's in at the moment, but I preface this every single time we talk about LSU. If you have not made it to Baton Rouge, the real Death Valley, at night, you are missing out. Just like I would tell every college football fan that they need to go to a game in the swamp at night, I will tell you, you need to go to Baton Rouge at night. It is unlike anything else you will ever experience in college football. It is absolutely a religion there. Florida, LSU, 7:30. This is an interesting matchup because LSU is incredibly, incredibly talented. Maybe hasn't looked quite as good as we expected after week one. Going into week two, I mean, they got that monkey off their back week one. They they ended that 5-year home opener losing streak. But I think Gus Meyer and company really have not fully gotten it clicking on all cylinders yet. Is Florida getting them at the right time? Well,
this is the best time to get them because of what you said. I do think in like 5 weeks, LSU's offense will look entirely different. But my biggest question to this is, does Florida really come out fighting? Because last year, it took a series of punches for him to wake up. Now, obviously, part of that was also getting the spark of Lagway, but it took several either bad losses or painful losses before this team really was able to flip that switch. And can the amount of mistakes and issues that lost in the USF game really get fixed at night in Death Valley? It's going to be tough. Lagway doesn't look awesome right now. I don't think he's banged up, but it might just be rust from not practicing all summer. Florida's defense does look awesome. The defense looks great. I mean, only allowing 16 points because I'm not including the safety. 16 points at home against USF. That's a good number. Should win you a game. Shout out against LIU. The defense looks great, and they have a great test against LSU to do it. Into the analytics side of it, Florida's defense hasn't graded super well against stopping explosive passing plays. We saw that against USF where they hit the one, a deep shot for a touchdown. LSU is probably the worst team in the country to play while that is one of your weaknesses with how many receivers they have, looking at how strong Nussmeier's arm is. And the Tigers' defense is unbelievably fast and physical. Perkins and Whitweeks at linebacker are incredible. Mansour Delane and AJ Halsey in the secondary. LSU's defense is really, really good. Florida's offense has not looked good at all, right? And I mean, I kind of thought that Florida was sort of hiding their playbook, keeping it vanilla for the first two games. Yeah. I'm not convinced that's the case anymore after what happened against USF. Maybe I'm wrong about that. Maybe Florida really just got caught napping last week, but LSU, I do think, has a heavy advantage on both sides of the ball. And I do, at this point, kind of question how much fire Florida's going to have going into this game.
TJ, LSU is sitting at a 9.5-point favorite. Obviously, Florida coming off that home loss to USF. And we've talked about the less impressive game against Louisiana Tech than we were necessarily expecting. What is there, just what Will mentioned about how, you know, we were thinking potentially was Florida holding something back in week one, and obviously that wasn't the case against USF. Was LSU holding anything back, and that's why that score was less than impressive, and we're about to see, you know, the doors blown off of Florida? Is there a whole secret playbook that's about to come out?
Yeah, I mean, I would think that they don't put much on tape against Louisiana Tech. And so I think that's definitely a possibility. I will say defensively, they've been so much better than I could have ever expected this year. That's really my biggest question for LSU was, could the defense figure it out? And holding Clemson to, which Clemson, again, you know, we only have two data points to go on so far. Clemson didn't look very good against Troy or whoever they played on Saturday either. Now there was rain, and we talked about that with Georgia, Austin Peay. But I do think that, you know, Will's correct. You are catching them at a really good time. But you also have a situation where, man, Florida's offense is what worries me right now. And LSU's defense has been the most pleasant surprise on their team so far. And so, I mean, you hold Clemson to no points in the second half, 10 points overall. You hold Louisiana Tech to a garbage time touchdown. And again, I know it's Louisiana Tech, but you hold them to a garbage time touchdown late in the game when you're already up by 20. Anyway, I struggle. I mean, now that Florida has put what they put on the field and on film against USF, the possibility of them doing that again is real, right? And that's why they're a 10-point favorite, right? In a game that most people were picking LSU in this spot anyway before the season. I think you picked LSU before we even took a snap against LIU. But I do think that you know, it makes you think, yeah, like there's a scenario, you run this thing 100 times, there's a handful that get kind of out of hand. I will say this, I think Florida does a really good job of responding. And that doesn't mean I think they're going to win this game, because I'll pick LSU when we pick it here in a minute. But they do a good job of responding. And I do think they get up for competition that they're not supposed to get up for. Sometimes they lose games they shouldn't lose, but I do think they'll respond well. I think DJ is a gamer, even though he hasn't been super impressive to start the year. I think Napier will call a better game than he did against LSU because he has to. Is it enough to win? I don't think so. I still think LSU will win this, but I would say this game is, you know, at or around that 10-point mark. Like, I don't think LSU wins this thing by 24. Is it possible that LSU clicks and Florida continues their struggles? Absolutely. Like, there's a chance this thing is over at halftime and we're just like, all right, well, how long until we fire up the hot board? But I do think that more likely than not, Florida plays up, Lagway is a gamer, plays better, and, you know, LSU's slight struggles. I mean, they're 2-0, right? But their slight struggles on the year are kind of manifested. But yeah, I still lean LSU pretty heavily here. I wouldn't expect a blowout though.
Well, in the Florida LSU game, the things that most notably stood out, I mean, there were lots, and Florida didn't play well all across the board, but really costly penalties, poor tackling by the defense, disappointing line play, both offensive and defensively. Knowing those three things, and then I think, you know, questionable situational play calling. I personally do not think the play calling overall was actually terrible. I think that it was fine. I think execution was not great across the board, but I do think there were some head scratchers there late in the fourth quarter. But if we are going to say that those are the biggest issues that Florida faced, what is the biggest one to correct from last week to this week that can give Florida, you know, a boost going into this game?
Yeah, I mean, it just has to be being able to execute, right? Like, we saw Tony Livingston drop the touchdown pass last week. The play where Lagway had Hansen and Trey Wilson seemingly both open, he just kind of lobbed it with bad mechanics. Like, just small things like that. Leaving touchdowns on the board shouldn't kill you against USF, even though it did. It will absolutely kill you on the road at LSU. So if Florida isn't able to kind of clean up those simple mistakes where we have put ourselves in an opportunity to score, and we have run the play where actively this guy is wide open, you just have to be able to convert those, period, and especially in a game like this. So if Florida isn't able to kind of clean up those silly mistakes, and they have, you know, if they leave any points on the board, I have a hard time believing they're able to really keep up with LSU here. So it's really just that execution once they've done the hard work to put themselves in a spot where they're in a good place to score.
Yeah.
All right, TJ, give me your score prediction. Keep in mind the line is 9.5 right now.
Yeah, I think this is lower scoring. I do have a lot of faith in Florida's defense. Now, if Lagway's turning the ball over, or if Florida's leaving points on the board and gives them more possessions, it could certainly get up there. But yeah, I think this is relatively close. I think I like, 24-17. I'll even take Florida to cover. I'll show a little faith that they get up for this game. But I have a hard time seeing them going into Baton Rouge at night with what we've seen so far from them this year and finding a way to win. So I like LSU to win this game. Maybe it's a little closer in the spread. Maybe never really in doubt. But I do think that Florida gets up for it. I think the defense comes out and continues to be really, really good and limits LSU because they've not, LSU scored 34 points on the season, 33 points on the season, or 40 points over two games. Like, I don't think they're just going to explode for a 35-point win or anything. But yeah, 24-17, I think LSU is just a better team playing at home in the toughest environment in football. And Florida looked like crap last week, so I'll take the Tigers by 7.
Well, what you got?
I mean, to TJ's point, I do also have LSU, and it would not shock me if this game is competitive because of everything that he said. I am, however, going to intentionally overreact to what we saw last week with hope that I'm wrong. I'm going 31-10 LSU. Florida's dry. It's horrible. I do think LSU wins this game straight up, but that is an intentional overreaction, hoping that I'm wrong and Florida's able to keep it competitive and look decent on the road this weekend.
All right, I'm going to go 27-20 LSU. I was predicting LSU to win this game prior to Florida losing to USF. So I don't actually think mine is an overreaction. I just think this is a good LSU team with a veteran quarterback at home. Baton Rouge is a 5-point advantage in my opinion, more so than, the normal 3-point home field advantage. So that's where I'm at on that one. All right, guys, let's wrap up our last game of the week. South Carolina versus Vanderbilt. We have South Carolina versus Vandy is a must see. And that's not that often that you can say that about a game involving Vanderbilt, but this might be one about 7:45 Saturday night, Williams-Brice Stadium. We were talking, I don't know if it was earlier in this show or if it was before we even came on, it might've been earlier in this show, about a common opponent between these two programs in Virginia Tech. And, South Carolina needed some last minute heroics to get it done. And, Vanderbilt had no problem. So, Will, what do you like about this Vanderbilt team?
I mean, Clark Lee is building such a legitimate program here. And being in Nashville, when I walk outside and I listen, I can hear the buzz. I can hear the buzz around this football team. Like, there is so much actual excitement about what this program is doing and just about this Virginia Tech game. Like, they're down double digits at halftime. Then they won the second half 34-0 on the road. In a place in Lane Stadium that's not easy to go into necessarily against a program who's about on their same level, that was just incredibly impressive. And I think Vandy's defense is going to be able to kind of keep up and slow down Lenore Sellers a little bit, you know, at least not let him really fly around. Their defense has a great success rate at guarding passing downs, and South Carolina's offense has the inverse of that. They're not very great in passing downs. So if Vandy has Carolina behind the sticks, that's where they have a really good advantage to really try and keep Carolina contained. And they Gamecocks have looked slow. You know, not much offense against Virginia Tech after that first drive, aside from their punt return and the one deep shot to Nick Harbor. And against SC State this past week, they only had 17 points offensively because Vicari Swain brought back two punts, and they also had a scoop and score. So I still think the world of Lenore Sellers, I still think this offense has a lot of untapped potential. They haven't shown it yet, and I don't think that's something that sustains all season. But against a Vanderbilt team that is fighting and believes, and against a defense that has played really, really well, I'm very interested to see how the Gamecocks do come out and look offensively.
TJ, Vegas opened with South Carolina as a 7.5-point favorite. Given the football that we've seen be played by both schools so far, if you're Vanderbilt, is that bulletin board material for you?
Maybe a little bit. Like, they take everything with a chip on their shoulder just because of who they are, and rightfully so. They should, after some of the wins they had last year. I think that line is set fairly well. Like, I would take South Carolina by a touchdown, and in any normal situation, I'd also say that they probably should win this game by more than a touchdown at home against Vandy. But with what we've seen with one common opponent and the way that both teams have looked so far, I like Vanderbilt in this situation. Now, I don't necessarily know that I like them enough to pick them to win, but I think they've got a great chance. They were not able to run the ball at all last year outside of Pavia, kind of going off a few times. And so I think with South Carolina losing some guys up front, they still have, we've talked about Stewart a ton. I bought him this year, let's remember, and Will sold him. with that situation, can they run the ball a little bit more effectively and shorten this game? If this comes down to, and it'll be great football for us if we do, but if this comes down to a Lenore Sellers versus Diego Pavia situation, I certainly would lean Sellers at home, right? And that, as much as I like Pavia, as much as I like his moxie, as much as I like him, you know, on the field and having fun and really, you know, kind of vibing out, I would certainly lean Sellers. So I think Vandy has to be able to establish the run better than they did last year against this team. And there's an opportunity to do that. Even though this one's at Williams-Brice and the last one was in Nashville, I do think that they have a chance because of what South Carolina lost up front. I also think that they have to, I mean, South Carolina is Beamer ball one times 1,000. Like, they have to make sure that they are not giving away free points, 25-yard returns, whatever. Like, they have got to be very good on special teams because South Carolina has killed two teams in a row with that. And so if you can keep this thing competitive, if you can keep it close, if you cannot have those massive mistakes that lead to big time transition, game change, sudden plays, that's a big deal for Vandy in this one. So I don't know, you know, I think they would take anything as bulletin board material, just like nobody believe in them and doubting them and everything else. But I think Vandy's in a decent spot to keep this game pretty interesting as late as they can. And we've seen what happens when teams keep games late interesting.
Pavia has declared that this is a must win for the Vanderbilt program. And it would be the first time they've beaten South Carolina since 2008, which I believe Spurrier was still the coach back then. But Will, if Vanderbilt wins, what went right for them?
I think that they were able to connect on deep passes, which honestly sounds crazy to say about a Diego Pavia offense because of how like ground and pound that's supposed to be. But Vandy does have a positive grade in explosive passes on offense to this point. Carolina's defense is a negative grade. So it's actually a pretty good matchup for Vanderbilt to be able to, you know, run the ball on first down, maybe get to like a second and two, all of a sudden play action, you can hit a deep shot. So if Vandy's offense is able to kind of unlock a passing element that we only see situationally and kind of use it a little more effectively, a little more consistently against Carolina, that'll be very good for them because, like I said, about putting Carolina behind the sticks, you put them behind on the scoreboard too, I think the same thing happens where you're forcing Carolina into like real passing downs where they've struggled so far this year. That's really when Vanderbilt, I think, can get an advantage.
All right, let's give our predictions. TJ, what's the outcome of this one?
Yeah, I think South Carolina kind of clicks this week and puts it all together. I'd love to see an upset in this. I'm couch riding like you are this weekend after soccer's done. So I'd love to see more craziness from college football, but I have a little more faith that South Carolina puts it together. Hoping I'm wrong, but give me 31-28. I'll say it's close. I'll say it's a ton of fun.
What I wrote down.
Well, now you have to change. Wow. But I'll take South Carolina at home.
All right. What you got, Will?
I'm also leading South Carolina by a little bit. I do think the total for this game is 47.5. I think that's way too low because I think there's an overreaction to Carolina's slow start offensively, and I think that Vanderbilt's going to be able to keep up with them. I've got 35-31 South Carolina. I would not be surprised at all if that score was flipped for Vandy, though, because this team is a legitimate culture switch from what they used to be. The last time they started 3-0 was 2017, and I'm sure that they know that in that building. So I do think this game is going to be incredibly close, incredibly competitive. I wouldn't be shocked if Vanderbilt does win this game, like I just said, but for right now, I will lean Carolina. I think they get it fixed on offense, and I think they're able to just outlast Vandy in the end.
All right, well, I wrote down 35-27 Vanderbilt. So I'm very excited to 2 in a row pick against you. We will see who is correct. Okay, guys.
If they, one more point. If they win this, they play Georgia State next and Utah State after that, which I think they lost to Georgia State last year. That'll be a revenge game for them. But they'll be 5. I'll write it down now. They won't do it again. If they win this, they're going to be 5-0 going into Tuscaloosa, which Alabama will be coming off. That's 1 week removed from the Alabama Georgia game in Athens. And so Bama could have 2 losses going into that game. We'll see what happens with Wisconsin. Vandy might be 5-0. So if you needed a reason to cheer for Vandy as a neutral, it would be that.
I need 5-0 top 15 Vanderbilt so bad. I just want to see that.
Bring it on.
I want to see that too. I given how I think the season's going to go as a Gator fan, give me 5-0 Vandy. All right, guys, this was fun. Make sure that you are following all of us on social media. Will, where can everybody follow you and listen to your work?
I'm on W Thomas Sports on Twitter, Tailgate Talk SEC on YouTube and podcast.
All right, TJ, what about you? We're all right down there in the bottom too.
I was going to say, just follow me at @Allie_Peek and yell at me there. So if you have anything you disagree with, just do it there. Now, TJ_Pinder.
All right. @Allie_Peek. Make sure you're following a Peek Inside Gator Football as well if you're watching this and are a Gator fan. All right, guys, this was fun. Same time, same place next week.
Sounds good.
See you guys later.